Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. My podcast for today is one that is actually a little delayed. I've had other things come up, so I didn't do this as quickly as I originally planned on, but I think this actually works out kind of well because this will help stagger the approach and basically just kind of repeat and get the thoughts out there again. Because a little while back, there was the release of the Surviving Sepsis Campaign Guidelines, the 2018 update. And you probably saw some stuff on social media. Maybe you haven't, and that's totally fine if you haven't. But this caused basically a huge cluster for all of us because it wants to do things that are absolutely ridiculous. Maybe in certain populations and certain patients, it's going to work well. But for the vast majority, this is only going to make our jobs more difficult. And so these groups of people came out and discussed it, most notably MCRIT and the rest of the MCRIT crew, Scott Weingart and the like, all came out and talked about it. But these were not the only people. In fact, there's, and we'll include in the show notes, kind of all the details behind it. But a lot of people became involved because, well, quite frankly, they're all pissed. And I am too, because I am frustrated that the Surviving Sepsis campaign has pushed the envelope just a little too far in my mind. And it's becoming basically less and less appropriate and something that's frustrating me significantly. So we've always had sepsis bundles. At least when I say always, I mean over the last decade or so, we've been dealing with this, and it's not necessarily a bad thing in itself. It kind of gives us the idea of what all we should be doing. And as we talked about sepsis before in the podcast, a lot of us may not have the best grasp, and maybe we need a little bit of something to put all this together, and that's okay. We do the same thing with a lot of different things, strokes, MIs, you name it, there's probably something out there for it. And that's not a bad thing in of itself. The problem becomes when we require a certain workup, even though it may not be appropriate for that patient. We follow a cookbook method. And what happened with this 2018 update is that we took this cookbook method that was a 3 and a 6 hour bundle, and we combined it all to a 1 hour bundle. And this bundle doesn't start from recognition. It starts from triage. So as soon as that patient walks in, gets registered, is triaged, bam, the clock starts. 60 minutes to do everything that they want you to do. Now, you don't necessarily have to finish it in 60 minutes, but a lot of it actually has to be essentially done in order to recognize it. And there's obviously some issues with it. We go into a little more detail in some ways in the show notes, but we're going to still hit it all here. And my big parts of this argument, we're going to go over and why this is not such a good idea and why we need to do something about this before CMS or anyone else picks this up and thinks that this is a good freaking idea. I want to talk about this in kind of a stepwise approach. First part is, let's talk about recognizing sepsis. Now, if you are clinically practicing, you realize that this is notoriously difficult. We start out with SIRS, and it was really sensitive, but it wasn't super specific. And the problem was that someone who twists their ankle on a hot day is going to be SIRS positive. Does that mean we need to work them up for sepsis? Hell no. We use clinically what we are thinking and say, yep, this patient's okay. Then we have the opposite end of the spectrum and something that was more recently suggested, which was QSOFA. And QSOFA is the exact opposite. It's rather specific, but it's not very sensitive. So it's great with my patients who are really sick and in some ways can help with kind of figuring out mortality and how high risk these patients are. But my patient who's coming with pneumonia, who ends up becoming septic with time, this is probably not going to be as helpful, or you know, someone with a bad UTI or stuff like that. So essentially, we don't have something that is great with both sensitivity and specificity. They're working on doing something that's going to help with both of those issues, as well as getting an appropriate likelihood ratio and stuff like that. But right now, SIRS and QSOFA, the two most commonly used here in the United States, are just not great. I should mention that, obviously, if your patient is super sick, you'll figure this out really quick and you'll recognize it at the door. But what about all these old patients who are ultra mental that come in that we see every day? Could it be a stroke? Could it be a UTI? Could it be any number of things? Dehydration? We run into this all the time. And then we get the sinkhole patient. Well, there's all sorts of things that can mimic that. Just name a chief complaint and you have something that could potentially be sepsis, but a lot of times it's not. And yet somehow you have to identify that within the first hour of that patient hitting your doors. And again, remember, this isn't talking about someone who is necessarily coming through by ambulance because, yeah, those patients are usually going to get a fast worker. Not always, but if they're sick enough, we're going to pick that up real quick, keeping the ball rolling and making sure we're doing the proper workup and everything like that. That's not the hard part. What happens on the day with a busy ED where you have someone who comes in during the middle of flu season and that person is septic, but we don't recognize it right away? Does that mean that every single person who comes in with flu-like symptoms need to have this whole big septic workup, get started on broad spectrum antibiotics and get a 30 cc per kg pulse? Again, this is madness to me. This is something I just don't understand. And it's something that is quite frankly dangerous, as we'll talk about more here in a second. But when you come in with such vague complaints, basically what they're wanting you to do is they want you to recognize the patient, get started on IV fluids, get labs sent, have a lactate done, basically do all the things to help identify that this is a septic patient within 1 hour. And if they need it, the 30 cc per kg bolus, which is basically for anyone hypotensive, but again, or a high lactate greater than 4, which again, if they aren't hypotensive, we have to wait for that lactate to come back. We may be lucky if we're going to get that back in an hour, especially on a busy day like I'm talking about. And then we have to get them started on broad spectrum antibiotics within an hour. What happens when the patient is still in the waiting room for the first couple of hours of their time? Does that mean we have to start in the waiting room? Well, according to this, we're supposed to do that. And if you have been practicing long enough, you may remember that they did this for pneumonia. And the problem was with that 4-hour bundle, they did a lot of harm and a lot of inappropriate antibiotics, and it led to less than optimal care. So why are we doing this again? Why are we deciding to do this again and make it worse by making sure that they have to get IV broad spectrum antibiotics and that they have to get it done within an hour? Again, the patients who are sick, this is a no-brainer. This is going to be easy. But for most of our patients who come in, they're either not going to have sepsis tattooed on their forehead, or as I've seen this before, they really weren't that bad. And then a couple of hours into their visit, as things evolve with time, now they become much more sick and becomes much more obvious. Or we just realize when we look at labs later, hey, there's something else that's going on. All these types of things we have to seriously consider. Then you get things like they want you to get blood cultures done before you give broad spectrum antibiotics, which sounds good, makes sense. But here's this really goofy thing with all this. In the past, and they don't really specify it as well this time, but in the past, they specifically make note that you should not delay IV antibiotics for cultures, but you get dinged by CMS if you decide to give IV antibiotics before getting the cultures. So pick one. Just figure out which one you want and pick it. I really believe that we should delay antibiotics for cultures and those who are really sick, especially if we're going to do this crap. But again, this is something that gets really confusing and really perplexing. We should also talk about some of the issues that come up with the Surviving Sepsis campaign. I like to believe that we are all altruistic and that this was appropriately meant to happen in the first place, and maybe something just went astray. But this evidence that they're using is pretty weak. And they even talk about how most of it is either low quality or best practice statements with some moderate quality evidence, but most of it's lower level evidence. And they make strong recommendations on this without any strong evidence to go with it. This is worse because we're talking about lots of conflicts of interest here. Eli Lilly is kind of one of the main groups of people that started this out, the Surviving Sepsis campaign. It all came back to Zygris, or activated protein C. And the reason why this was a big issue was because they pushed it and they pushed it in the guidelines. even when almost half of the people who were the authors at the time, the 2008 guidelines, 11 out of 24, even though there were already issues with controversy and lacking of evidence and neutral trials, all this stuff going on, they still recommended in the guidelines until it was finally pulled in 2011. And ask anyone who's practicing at the time or who's been practicing or is familiar with this issue. And yeah, the activated protein C issue and Eli Lilly and the Surviving Sepsis Campaign guidelines, all this was kind of a huge cluster and something that really leads to a lot of debate on this. Because is there a conflict of interest still? Probably. And especially when we're pushing things like this and we don't have the best evidence behind it, it makes me concerned. So, like I said, I'm going to include more of this in the show notes, but I just want you to keep in mind, this is something that I am worried about, as are many of my colleagues, and they have done a great job trying to push forward this issue in a nice, concise manner, and they have actually made a petition on this to try and explain how this is a problem. Now, before I go into that, one thing I do want to mention is that Surviving Sepsis Campaign has a history of CMS adopting it. And they've adopted this without really improvement. In fact, there was a nice little study that the 2015 implementation of the Surviving Sepsis Campaign guidelines by CMS did not result in improved survival in adults with sepsis. And the reason why this matters is because if we're going to go through all this, if we're going to demand it, and we're going to base our pay off of these guidelines, we need to have proof that it's actually going to make a difference. And I'm not really seeing it. And I'm worried that if we push this too hard, we are going to cause more harm than good, especially when we're trying to do this one-hour bundle nonsense. This is crazy because this is going to be, again, this is going to be like pneumonia. This is going to be like the other stuff where we push and push and push so hard they're going to risk causing harm to our patients. I just don't get why we're going to do this. So here's the issue. We need to get involved. We need to figure out how to make this happen. And Surviving Sepsis Campaign needs to retract these guidelines before someone picks this up, because only more badness is going to ensue. You know, we thought the 2015 guidelines had some issues, but now the 2018 update is going to cause even more problems for us down the line. I can almost guarantee it, because of this type of issue. What we really should be doing in emergency medicine especially is customizing how we take care of septic patients. It's worth noting, by the way, that this update was not done by anyone in emergency medicine. This is done by critical care physicians and the like. And essentially, us, the people who are going to deal with this frontline, who have to do stuff in 1 hour in order to expect payment for this, it's dangerous. So what we really need to do is all get together at local, state, federal level, you know, organizations like at the stages of continental groups like Europe, stuff like that. Whatever level, we should be taking this to a more local level versus saying we're going to follow these guidelines that are international but don't necessarily apply to everyone. And that we should figure out, free of bias, with the appropriate populations, the appropriate recommendations to go with the level of evidence that currently exists, rather than making strong recommendations on low quality or best practice stuff. So like I said at the beginning, and I mentioned it again a few minutes ago, there is a petition out there. Scott Weingart basically headed it along with a bunch of other people, and you can find it in our show notes. I highly, highly, highly encourage, if you don't usually go to the show notes, and there are people who do that, they only listen to the podcast, I want you to please go to totalem.org, and under the Emergency Professionals tab, you will find this on the most recent post. If you're listening to this in any reasonable time, please go and do that. They are still needing plenty of signatures. We can do our bit to help. Please share this. Please let your colleagues know what is going on so that we are not all screwed by something that isn't appropriate. And you'll see on the petition and on the various websites and their posts all the different people who are supporting this. And I've already done my part, but we need to all make our voices heard. So I'm not trying to preach. I just want everyone to know just how important this is, because this is something that could potentially lead to a lot of harm and could only cause more frustration, more issues down the line. So let's do the appropriate thing. Get on the website, click on the link, sign the petition, get others to do the same. Let us do what is best for our patients. And until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.